This is episode 20 of the Empowering Elves podcast. Today, we're joined by Dr. Mariana Castro to talk about teaching with language development in mind. Welcome to the Empowering Elves podcast. I'm Tan Nguyen, and the goal of this podcast is to serve language learners just like me and to empower passionate teachers just like you. I have a confession to share. When I first taught language learners in high school, I would start them off with similar lessons that I saw playing on Sesame Street. If it was August, we have a unit on objects like pencils and notebooks and verbs such as sharpen and take out. If it was October, we'd have words such as jack-o'-lantern, ghost, candy, costume. I thought that since my students were starting at the beginning of their language journey in English, they should start with beginner language lessons. That kind of thinking was really limiting, and I think I widened the achievement gap for some of my students. My high school language learners were speaking in extended, complex sentences in their home languages, yet I was teaching them a word at a time. I didn't realize if a student's language has developed to a high level in their home language, then they can learn another one at the same high level with support. And this concept is the reason why I invited Dr. Mariana Castro to join this podcast. Mariana is the Deputy Director of the Wisconsin Center of Education Research, which seeks to conduct education-related research to share it with educators like you and I. If you use WIDA standards, you have Mariana to thank for, as she was one of the individuals who led the development of the K-12 WIDA standards. At the end of each month, I like to pause and stop and thank people who left Apple reviews and also tweeted and commented on Twitter. Caldinger left a review. This person wrote, "I have this podcast to set automatically download because I never want to miss an episode. It's that good. Tan provides relevant and deep, yet also practical insights, research, and best practices through dialogue with a diverse group of experts in the field of language education." Thank you, Caldinger. I also want to say thank you to Satley Stock. I'm not sure if I pronounced your name right, and you have to forgive me. She created a clickable Bitmoji room with resources that lead to more Jim Cummings videos. She also had her red light, green light, yellow light, and other resources. It was a super cute emoji room. I want to thank Carrie Mage and Katie Topo, who both created sketch notes as they listened. I also want to say thank you to Nicola Thornback. She even took notes using the traffic light teaching method. So she had red light, yellow light, and green light, and she took notes on the side. Sadly, Carrie, Katie, and Nicola, thank you for engaging with the podcast in this way. It just makes all the hours really worth it. Thank you. I make sure to respond to every single tweet about the podcast, so thank you. And if you take the 3 minutes to just leave a review and write a comment, that would be so great. It helps other listeners consider if this is the right podcast for them. Now, on to today's episode. Today with us is Dr. Mariana Castro. She is the interim director at WIDA. And of course, we here at on the podcast are fans of WIDA and everything WIDA, especially Can Do Philosophy. And I met Mariana. I'm actually recording from my school right now, the school where Mariana was the keynote at the ELSA conference. The ELSA conference is a conference for language teachers internationally, but in Southeast Asia. And Mariana presented at Saigon South International School, and it was just awestruck by you and John, and they said, "Oh." When I thought about creating this podcast, I thought of Margot, Gottlieb, you, John, like people I need to have on the podcast to share your wealth and experience. So, Mariana, can you introduce yourself to the community?
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Mariana Castro, and I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I work for the University of Wisconsin, and I am very lucky. WIDA is housed within the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, and we are in constant, kind of like constant learning with people who are doing research on all different things. So it's a very exciting place to be. And I feel like very lucky. Like, that's what I do for a living. I get to learn. And then I go to schools and I learn some more from people who are actually doing the hard work. So I'm very excited. I was also awestruck by you, Tan. I saw you present at the same conference and I thought you were awesome. So
I appreciate it. Just sharing your work. I am a better human being, but a better teacher because of WIDA. It's so funny that I have a podcast, I have a blog, I'm writing books about language instruction. Because I was the teacher that used to say, kids can't do this. We can't expect them to do that. Their parents can't do this. We can't expect their parents to do that. You can't do this to kids. You can't ask kids to do this. Here, let me pull them out of your room. Let me teach them the colors of the rainbow. They don't need to know photosynthesis right now. And then I don't know who introduced me to WIDA, but when I went, they said, oh, we have just a philosophy of can do. We can drown ourselves in what they can't do. But if we just focus on what they can do, it just makes things possible. And just a shift that WIDA has created. So we are better because of WIDA. I'm better because of that. And our kids' lives are better because of that. Because we, as teachers of language learners, multilinguals, we have to be the advocate. And we need the most professional development before we can support schools and our colleagues.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, I always give this example of a very busy mom, and I come in the evening and people around my house, especially these little preteens that I have, are always hungry. And when I'm getting ready to cook or prepare food for them, I never start looking for things I don't have.
Yes.
You know, I never start looking for, you know, chicken because I don't have chicken. I actually look for things that I have. I told you I live in Wisconsin, so we always have cheese and Mexican, so we always have tortillas, so it's like quesadillas, right?
Yes. Avocados?
Avocados. You can add avocados to the quesadillas, yes. But as teachers, you know, I feel like it's the same thing we need to do. It's like we need to figure out what it is in our assets and what's in the assets that students are bringing to the classroom so then you can put it together. If we focus on what students cannot do, then we just don't know where to go next. Right. So to me, it always made sense.
I speak in metaphors. And so when another person speaks metaphor, you're like, oh, you're speaking my language. So what? I've never heard about that. And I will quote you and I will say, Dr. Mariana Castro says, look, when she cooks for her teens, quesadillas, she doesn't look for what she doesn't have. We always look for what we have. I just interviewed Amy King, who used to work at WIDA. And she said, people can't start with can't because we don't know what to do with can't.
Right.
Can't isn't a go. It's always a red light. So thank you for that. Let's talk about language development and students' age appropriateness.
Yeah, you know, I always think about it in a couple ways. And one of the ways that I think about it is that we are used to living in a world where we get everything fast, especially now with technology.
Yes.
And language is developmental, which means that you can't rush it. Students are where they're at.
Yes.
And that's why we have this kind of philosophy, right? Because you really need to know what your students can do so that you can build from that. It does not mean, though, that you always start kind of like when you were learning a foreign language in school and everybody learned in present tense. And then the next week you would learn past tense. And imagine if we lived in such a world that when kids just walked into our school, we said, oh, don't talk to them about past tense. They can't learn history yet, right? They are getting all these context and they're learning all this language through the context. And language and content are like so close to each other that the way we need to think about language development is dynamic. We can't think about it as, you know, static and linear and goes from A to B to C. But no, it's dynamic and it's very based on the experiences students have. So we over the years, we've thought about language as a system. Language is a system, right?
Yes.
Language has this discourse level, this sentence level, and these word levels. However, this system, it's based on two things. It's based on choices, always choices. What drives the system is our choice that, or the choices we make about what to use about that system that we know, based on, you know, what the context is. Who am I talking to? What is the activity that I have in the classroom? As well as my own worldview. So as teachers, what we're doing is always expanding that worldview. The moment we only focus on the system, then we're losing kids. Because kids need to know not just how to create something like passive voice, but they need to understand that when you're writing a paper in science, there are certain expectations about the discourse of it, and you want to sound very like an expert. So in order for me to sound as an expert, I need to remove myself, and that's why we use a passive voice, right? But in language arts, I might be trying to talk about inhumanity done upon some people, right? So I don't care as much as to who did it, but what was done upon the people, onto these people. So then I also use passive voice. So if I only teach passive voice without connecting it to the context, I'm losing that opportunity to give kids an understanding of how I can use language, not just to send different messages, but also to step into different spaces and also to take on different identities. All of a sudden, I'm taking the identity of a poet because I am talking about inhumanity. But over here, I'm taking the identity of a scientist, of someone who is an expert. So by helping students understand this connection between the content and the language and the context, which to me is bigger than just the content, what I'm doing is I'm giving the keys to the car to kids, as well as I'm providing them multiple personalities, multiple identities. And that's where the power lies for our students, right? So when we talk about the developmental piece of language, we're talking about two different things, right? How I acquire more and more language, but also how from kindergarten, we need to be building this understanding of language. We have kids in our classrooms who are multilingual.
Yes.
We talk about global citizenship, right? Part of being part of this world is being multilingual. So we have here kids who are primed to be global citizens. So how do we, from, you know, as thinking about our school system, how do we help them create this power through language? How do we help them grow? So I like to think about it rather than thinking about what is different between elementary and middle school. What is the same? What is it that I'm building upon? So I think about it as a journey that has multiple paths. And that way, my students can come in anywhere in that path. You know, you have a map and you can create new pathways through it. If I think about it as only like building blocks, I always need to start with the first block. If I always think about linear, I always have to go back to the beginning. And just imagine that I had to wait for my kids to learn all the colors before they could do chemistry.
Yes.
Why not learn chemistry and look at how the substances change when you're having chemical reactions? And by the way, they're going to be using colors in a very meaningful way.
Yes.
So they all learn colors through that. So the higher I start with language, the more challenging, the more exciting I do, the rest will come. If I start at the bottom with just list of words, then I don't have a chance to get kids into that frame of mind of thinking, okay, this is a system really, and I get to make those choices. All they're doing is they're memorizing. So then, you know, you have kids who are in remedial ways of thinking in inside the classroom who are getting bored. And as a teacher, you probably get bored too, right?
Yes,
because you're teaching in not a very exciting way.
Yes.
So, sorry, I get very excited about this.
Oh,
so
your passion, I love it. Keep going, because the listeners really feel that, like when your belief in you comes out. Thank you for that. I wrote so many things already. But this podcast and my blog is really just like, here are things Tan learned that now he understands better. Because I used to think that language development was linear. I really appreciate you talking about it. how language is not linear. And so just when you have a beginner, don't stick him in a room or don't stick her in a room and say, here, this, learn these words first. And I just saw your eyes roll and your head nod. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, you would be surprised how common that is.
Yes.
And we still have teachers asking us, like, well, this student is this newcomer, they're new to English. Should we put them in the previous grade level? Should we put them? And that's just such a disservice because kids are going to get excited about the content and they're going to get excited. I mean, language is a social, language learning is actually a social act. Right. And I would say a sociopolitical act, but I won't get all heavy on that. But the social piece means that they need, that you learn through interaction.
Yes.
So what interactions are you providing the child? Right. And you want interaction with peers, right? With peers of their own age. You want them to be learning about things that are on their own content. Otherwise, you're really putting barriers. You think that you're, and it's basically our fault. When I think about us as institutes of research, for a long time we talked about simplification. And I'm like always telling teachers, it's not about simplifying.
Yes.
It's about amplifying.
Yes.
How do you amplify language? How do you amplify opportunities? If we say that kids bring with them a worldview, every experience that you as a teacher provides that student with becomes part of that worldview.
Yes.
And that is so exciting for me because then imagine you become a designer. You know, we think that because we teach, students will learn, but no, we're designing these experiences. So how are we expanding that worldview? And how are we, if we do go back to that practice of putting kids in earlier grades, then what we're doing is we're saying all the experiences, all your worldview that might not fit the English world, my filter, they don't matter. No matter how much I say, oh yeah, speak your language. If I am doing those type of practices, I'm saying, your experiences don't matter. So how can I bring those experiences and make it dynamic for students?
I think that'll be the title of this podcast. Amplify, not simplify.
Excellent.
How beautiful that is. And I'm thinking that I hope that this podcast will serve teachers out there and administrators out there who are thinking about, okay, that science, the student in science class, we can actually, even though they're beginners, we can, the context, the richness of being in that science class will help them learn to read, to write, to speak, to listen. It's learning language, using language to solve problems instead of memorizing language for a test.
And, you know, you were talking about babies and how babies learn.
Yes.
We never talk to babies like apple.
Yes.
No, right? We read books to babies that they might not understand the first time they see them. But that's how you learn through language. You expose and you make language-rich environments, language-rich context for kids. So you see the language, you hear the language, you're interacting with that language. So, yeah.
It's funny, you say something and I want to go back to that. But then you say something new, and I'm like, "Wait, now I want to talk about this." I love it. What I'm, what you just said, helped me think about when I was learning Lao the first time, and I went to the wet market, open air market in Lao. My teacher didn't say, "Okay, you need to know all these vegetables. You need to know all the denominations of the money, how to say them. You need to have all these interactions before you can go and walk into the market." He said, here's money, go buy something in the market, learn some words. Right? And that, because the context of the market gave me the ability to hear, gave me the ability to interact, and that was the richness. And that's exactly the same thing you said about when we read to kids, we don't just start with apple. Right.
Right.
We read The Cat in the Hat, and the richness of it envelops them into this language, into the system of language. So I really appreciate that.
I mean, we talked about pre-teaching, right? Pre-teaching vocabulary.
Yes.
If you teach language and you don't have a hook, if you don't have any content,
yes,
it's lost.
Yes.
Kids lose it. Kids forget it.
Yes.
So teaching and content, and that's the idea of integration of language and content.
They're married together. Language is required for someone to comprehend and engage in content. But the language needs content for it to be useful.
Right.
They need each other. It's the yin and yang approach. Like you do need each other. I also wrote down what is the same between, instead of thinking, what do elementary school kids need, middle school kids, and high school kids need? I'm thinking right away of principals and curriculum directors when you said, what's the same between all of them? And yes, that's the key in thinking, instead of saying elementary school is different from high school, it is, but how can we, what's the same and how can we add on to it? And you're saying, don't think of language like blocks.
Right.
Where we build on the first block. Right.
Yeah.
What we say is, think of it as different pathways.
Yeah.
And that was really beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, there are obvious differences, right? Like yes, service deliveries look different. Yes. In elementary, you spend a lot of time with one-to-one teacher. So when you come and work in the classroom and you do a lot of the co-teaching and you collaborate, that just lends itself more because you really get to know the kids. I was a chemistry teacher, so I had 200 students.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? I had 200 students a day. So even to go to the bathroom, it was just insane. Yes. You know, you had to put in between. But then if the student wanted to talk to you, then you can do it. So then we as language specialists, we need to be thinking that I'm not going to be able to see 200 individuals. Yes. I'm not going to be able to see even 100 of them. I'm not going to be able to see 25 of them. So I need to be thinking about how my service to the school, how my relations with teachers change. And it might be that I need to do consulting, that I need to become kind of like that specialist for the teacher, because I know that that will have a larger impact. So the philosophy itself is what doesn't change, but the service delivers, the details change. And that is only knowing your own school, knowing what your students need and knowing what resources you already have.
And this is another mind shift that I've been having when you talked about that. I used to think that I am only useful when I'm sitting next to a kid. But I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe co-planning is another version of co-teaching, right?
Yeah.
The fact that when I sit next to a teacher and I say, tell me about your unit. What is the what is the writing that you want kids to do by the end? Oh, it's descriptive writing. Okay, so what are the words you want them to use to describe? Oh, these are the words? Okay, so if a unit has a beginning, middle, and end, where should we teach this part? Oh, okay, right. So this is your assessment at the end. Do you want to create the instructions together? Oh, okay, mm-hmm. I won't see you for the next 2 weeks, but here's a framework. Here's an acronym that you could use. Here's a graphic organizer. Here's a poster. Here's a Google Slides, series of Google Slides for you to use with your kids. I won't be there, but the fact that we planned together, we made language instruction really explicit.
Right. Yeah, I always think we're working ourselves out of a job.
Yes.
That should be our goal.
Yes.
Because guess what? We won't. But the more that we can build capacity, then the children that we serve can be supported throughout the whole day. If they're only relying on me, then they only get that support during that hour,
right,
15 minutes, 20 minutes that we're with them. But the more teachers that understand where we're going, what we're doing, the more, capacity and the more of a net, a safety net we have, yes, for children across the school day.
So we are equally valuable when we're next to kids as when we're next to teachers and we're capacity,
yes,
building, right? We're really developing, yeah, we're expanding. And I guess this is why John Hattie says collective teacher efficacy is is the thing that has the highest impact on students' learning. It's when teachers come together and they share ideas and share strategies and share approaches. But then the more important part is that their beliefs start to change. Their,
yes,
approaches start to change. Or they started adopting a different belief. I remember, so I used to be the teacher that would go to a social studies class and say, they don't need to know about rivers. Here, let me pull them out and let me learn this. Let me teach them in my own little room. But I remember a seventh grade teacher said, okay, that's not even the conversation we're going to have, Khan. He's going to stay in my class. Yes, he's a beginner from China and he's in seventh grade, but he's going to learn about rivers. This is the assessment at the end. What can we do together? What can you do together? Oh. What can you do for the kids? He's going to stay in this room. Because that wasn't the structure, right? Because ideally, I would pull this kid out during their social studies in an easier, simplified way. And he's like, yeah. Well, because our school system doesn't have that ability. And I rolled my eyes at that. And he said, okay, well, then we'll work with what we have. But because of that, his idea of, oh, this kid can learn the exact same thing as other kids. We just have to do it together. Change my belief. Because I always read about in books that were like co-teaching, keep kids in classes. I never believed in it. I used to be taught that way as an ESL student. I used to be pulled out consistently. And so you teach the way you were taught.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
But with new research, new ideas come out. But then if I didn't have that teacher, that seventh grade social studies teacher, I would never believe that no kids should stay in classes.
Yeah.
That's where they belong.
So you remind me of this idea, you know, language is developmental, right?
Yes.
But it's not linear. So if you think about it as a triangle, I don't know if you've ever seen that slide where, you know, when students are newcomers, really think about what do you need to go from a level one to a level two.
Yeah.
You need to learn more words, maybe a few phrases. But the more language you learn, the more complexity there is about language and the more specialized help you need. So really, when you have a student who's new to English, they can learn from peers, they can learn from their teacher, they can learn from tutors, they can absorb so much more. And so if we are specialists, language specialists, it's almost like we provide more value added for those cases for the students are going from a level three to a level four, that they need more of that specialized help. So in thinking about newcomers, it's like, that's why I was melting when you were saying that. Yeah, how can we support? How can we help this child together, right? Because it's our student, you know, and I think that I am from the same era that it's like, oh, they're my students. I'm going to save the world, you know, but it's a big shift for us in really providing students with that awareness, teachers with that awareness, and really empowering them to come together, because it's about that relationship, right? We're there to support that relationship between the child and actually not the child and the student, and the child and the teacher, but the child and the content. So it's almost like teachers, we need to kind of step away and say, how do we design these interactions between the child and the content, which could be with peers, we could be with others, but it's almost like we need to get out of the way so that those can happen.
Right. So beginning of the interview, you talked about like the social nature of language, like all learning is social. That's what Vygotsky said. And then you brought it back here again and you said, we need to come together to design interactions for kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there is one of us, 200 kids, and there are eight teachers who have your support.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go to 200 kids, but you can support the teacher to design instruction in a way that helps kids interact with each other.
So let me go back to, because you're taking notes, now I'm taking notes too. But this is what I meant about designing, and you might not be able to see it, but this is just a triangle.
Yes.
Okay? So we as teachers, we always think that we're teaching students, right?
Yes.
But the reality is that what we can do is, and this is like an arrow, a two-sided arrow,
yes,
we develop relationships with students. And just like, I mean, coaches develop relationships with students. We can become friends with the student, right? But ideally, this is not just about my relationship with the student. As a teacher, I also have a relationship with whatever I'm teaching,
yes,
whether it's chemistry, whether it's, in our case, it's language, right? But look at where we want to get is this area here, this relationship between the student and what we're trying to get to. Well, we don't have a direct connection to that. That's not something that we can create, put in a little worksheet or put in a pill and give the child, right? What we do is, and that's why I say we're designers, because what we can do, the only thing we can do, the closest we can get to is creating, designing an activity, designing experiences where the student gets to interact with the language,
yeah,
or where the student gets to interact with the content.
Yes.
So our students kind of like learn in spite of us, but it's about us. That's why it's so hard, right? Because what particular experiences get this for every single child?
Yes.
So I'm focusing on this only. It's kind of like one of those little tables that breaks the leg. If I'm focusing on this only, believe me, when I was studying chemistry at the university, I had all these professors who love the content. They didn't even know you existed or that you were in the room, right? So we can't do that either. But this is our goal. So it's about, how do we create these amazing experiences that kids can be excited about participating? That's what meaningful participation is about, right? Because if I create all these awesome activities and my students can be part of it, then they're not learning, right? That's the whole reason why we connect those to the learning. So that's my little
goal. I hope you share that every time you present as much as possible. Because you're so, here's there are people, and you are an instructional translator. That's a title that I gave you, because you are translating what the research says in a way that's clear, because you use metaphors and images to help us. So let's end it this way, because I want to have you go back to be with your kids to feed them more.
Yes.
Looking for whatever you have in your refrigerator instead of not looking for what you don't have. I love that. That'll stick with me forever. I end my podcast with a metaphor called traffic light teaching. And like a traffic light, when we see red, we have to stop. There are things in education that we should stop doing to kids and teachers. There are things that are yellow, meaning we should start to question. We should start to question about our practice. And there are green things, that things are like, yes, as much as possible, do this without abandonment. What would be your red, yellow, and green? It can be about anything related to instruction.
So really for me, like the big red is we need to stop asking children to leave who they are at the door.
Yes.
When they enter our classroom. Our children are multilingual, are dynamic multilinguals. They're not two monolinguals or three monolinguals in one. They don't cut in themselves in pieces. So one of the things that I'm going to in the yellow, I'm constantly asking myself is, what does that look like in the classroom?
Yes.
That's the thing that I would hope as teachers, we're always asking ourselves, because we can't get to that. We can't create that relationship between the student and the content. And we need to basically encourage it in so many ways. We need the students to bring all of their repertoire, everything they know, everything who they are, to really play with what they're learning. So asking ourselves, am I doing it? If not, how can I do it? How can I learn more about my students? How can I engage them in more? And then things that going all the way to the green is really play with language. Really don't be afraid. Never be afraid to say this is something going to be too high for my students or too hard for my students. Be worried about the words, about the single things that the coloring, the learning the colors, the learning the numbers. Go high. I think challenge your students. They will, you know, if you provide scaffolding is not about simplifying, but about building the steps,
yes,
you know, so that everybody can engage meaningfully in the content. So that's what we need to do, create all these rich environments, language-rich environments for kids. So they're my colors.
I love how you talked about, hey, let's not leave who you are at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because your identity informs everything. It sort of informs,
yeah,
your actions, how you see each other. And then it goes back to say, okay, if we want kids to be, if we want kids to bring who they are into school, what are we doing that's enabling that, that's supporting that, that's allowing, mm-hmm, that? And I instantly thought about what are the texts we're reading? What are the whole group texts that we're having kids read? Is it just about Asian kids? It's just, sorry, I'm in an Asian context. So a lot of my texts that are reading is from kids in Asia, kids in Vietnam, kids in Laos, kids in Thailand. So kids who could see that in them. Because I remember when I was going through, actually, you know what? From all the way through high school, from elementary school to high school, I think I only read one text that had an Asian protagonist. And that, this is like a therapy session.
Lay down, tell me more.
So doctor, it all started when, so yes, and this is something tangible that teachers can do to think about what are we doing, the text that we're showing kids, that having them read, is it reflective of their cultures and their identities? For example, like I do a lot of work in British Columbia, and they do a fantastic job of bringing First Nation texts in. They even have principles of learning from First Nation communities, where it's like, oh, okay, if I'm a student from a First Nation tribe, I will actually feel really represented and really respected, because it's not just colonization through education. It's really saying, the way my culture learns is when we sit in a circle and we talk as a community. And now that's really reflected in the way that the teachers in British Columbia really teach their kids. And that's how we reaffirm it.
Yeah, you know, and as you said, the books, it also remind me, it's also as teachers, we also need to bring all of who we are.
Yes.
Because we need to be vulnerable so that kids can see the authentic us.
Yes.
And, you know, we're also multilingual. So, and we also come from all different backgrounds. So I think that books as well as people, you know, just being there, being present.
Yeah. This has been such a great conversation. How has 45 minutes gone past so fast?
Oh, right.
So great. So thank you, Mariana, for sharing, Dr. Mariana Castro, for leading the way for us, holding the light, being a lighthouse for us. In this world, because it's hard what we do. Everything we do is of good intentions, and your work and your research helps inform our practices with the best intentions.
Thank you for inviting me. And best of luck. I think that the teachers are doing the real work. They're there every day. You know, teachers like you who work all day. You know, they're always like unexpected circumstances, and you rise up, and then after a full day of work, you do a podcast.
I really think if no one listens to this podcast, at least I'm learning something every single time I interview experts. So
well,
I really
thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being part of my classroom experience. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Adios.
Adios. Before we review your voice messages and the episode recap, I invite you to rate this podcast and leave a comment. Each episode takes 3 to 4 hours to record and edit, so your comments make all the hours worth it. And your reviews will help educators like you find the podcast. Did you catch her analogy for the can-do philosophy? I love how she said, "When I'm cooking for food, I don't look for what I don't have in the refrigerator. I look for the things that I have." On the same note, we look for what students and their families have that can make learning a successful experience. Mariana also gifted us with a lens to think about language development. She said that instead of seeing what's different between elementary, middle, and high school, we focus on what's the same throughout. The similarity is the thing we have to build upon from year to year. Additionally, she talked about how if you have an older language learner that is a newcomer, they will be served the most if you expose them to language at a high level, not just to teach them vocabulary words. Developmentally, these students can speak full complex sentences in their home language. So we can support them in creating complex sentences in English rather than holding them back another grade level or sticking them in a room away from other students until they have, quote, enough language proficiency. So like Mariana said, we need to see our job as designers of instruction and cultivators of context, because students will be most served when they are interacting with each other and content at high levels. In the next episode, we talk to a legend in the field, Dr. Margarita Espino Calderon, to learn about how we can help language learners learn content. Thank you for listening. Be safe and be rooted in peace. It's your turn to play traffic light teaching. Tweet at me either your red, yellow, or green light from this particular episode. If you would like to record a question or leave a suggestion that might be aired in future episodes, please go to empoweringells.com and look for the podcast tab. Your questions might be shared by many others, and your suggestions will improve how I facilitate this podcast. If you found this podcast helpful, I would really appreciate it if you would leave a comment to help teachers who, like yourself, are passionate about supporting language learners find this podcast.